This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Welcome to Follow the Sound. I am your host, Brian Kroc. Each week, we explore a different aspect of music, be it albums, concerts, or even just the artists themselves. And sometimes we do a little music history as well. Along with me, I've got my co-hosts, plural, Greg Harvey.
Hey, everybody.
And Jacob Crum.
How are you this evening?
So today we are doing an album review. And last time, Greg picked the album for MU330 Ultra Panic, which was a fantastic punk ska album that is just still sticking with me to this day.
And St. Louis.
And St. Louis natives. So we're going a lot further away. We're actually going to review a British band today called Nothing But Thieves. And the album is self-titled, Nothing But Thieves. And I came across Nothing But Thieves because of the music festival Life is Beautiful. My wife and I go every year down to Las Vegas to see Life is Beautiful. And it's just an amazing event. There's art, there's food, there's music. It's just a really, really cool thing. And it's a really cool vibe. Like, everybody's there to just have a good time and chill. It's like people aren't getting into fights and like doing all sorts of crazy stuff. It's just a fun time. So we were going through the list of bands that were on the listing there and trying to figure out, you know, who we wanted to go see so we could plan out our schedule. And all of a sudden, we click on this band, Nothing But Thieves. And if you see the album cover, of which I'll have it on the post, obviously, it's this horse sort of coming through the fog. And it just says Nothing But Thieves. I don't know what the significance of the horse is, but it's just a really, really cool album cover. And when the band started singing or started playing and everything, I was instantly hooked. Like, this is one of those bands that I honestly believe could be huge going forward. And I think that they'll make a big impression in the music industry, or at least that's what I'm really hoping for. So they played on one of the big stages down there and just did a fantastic job performing. And but let me give you a little bit more background on the band itself. So the band is actually from England, the UK, and they came together in 2012, I believe, in the near Essex. You ever been to Essex?
I've never been to Europe.
Well, there you go. So they were formed in 2012 near Essex, and the band consists of Connor Mason on vocals, Joe Landridge Brown on guitar, Dominic Craik on guitars and keyboards, James Price on drums, and Philip Blake on bass guitar. And in 2014, they were signed to RCA Records. So this is like their first real going out and getting music recorded and putting it out there to see what everybody else thinks.
Is this like the first big impression?
Yes, yes. And so they're still touring on just this one album right now. And honestly, they, for some reason, they really, really like hooked into me. Like, I started listening to them like the moment we got back. I searched for their album and I got it. And it still is one of these albums that is hitting me every time I listen to it today. And I am always sort of picking up little new things that they did. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get into Nothing But Thieves, the self-titled album, Nothing But Thieves.
I'm really gotta get up here.
So that was Excuse Me. And I love that track. When he kicks it up into that high falsetto and everything, and just then rocks it, you know, Excuse Me, I gotta get out of here. Like, I don't know, but for some reason that song I think is one of the like great kickoff songs of an album. It's like just starts off real low and kind of mellow in the background, and then just that high, high falsetto.
That really strikes me. Two initial thoughts. One of them was definitely the falsetto part, like you said, where it kicks in and the, I really dig that because it's very melodic, and sometimes falsetto can be a little startling, like when I do it, for example.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a little shrill, but that was really smooth and sweet. The other thought I had, too, is that it does kind of have a very current kind of what you hear out of the UK sound to it. I'm not saying like it's cliche or anything, but it's very reminiscent of some of the other things that I hear that are big right now, too. And I think that translates into why you were saying that you could see these guys going bigger and bigger.
Yes,
because it
yes.
sounds like stuff that is already bigger.
And I mean, and we'll move on to the next song here. The next song is called Ban All the Music. And I really dig this one. I actually think I played this one before when I did like a sampling of what the band was really like. And so I'm hoping that you guys also dig this one, too. Ban All the Music. That's Ban All the Music. I love it when they kick into that double time, too, in the second verse. But, man, I think that, for me, like that song's just a real good kicking song, which makes it great because it's number two on the track listing. And so it's like you get this good starter song, and then it's just like, boom, Ban All the Music.
I like it. I kind of have the same feeling the first time I heard Four from Blues Traveler.
Yeah.
Where I feel like the band is almost trying too hard to prove how good they are rather than just playing a whole song, but I do like it, having said that.
So I can actually see what you're talking about, because they are a pretty younger type group. You know, this is their first foray into actually having produced music, and the lead singer of the band has actually stated, like, on several occasions, though, that he doesn't really try to He's not trying to do anything in particular. He's just trying to be the best rock band that you know, he can create. He wants to write the best music that he can write. He wants to sing the best that he can. But at the same time, he's not like this superb, charismatic frontman. He's really sort of an internal guy. But when he gets up there on stage, I mean, he really can perform, even though he's not like dancing around all over the stage and stuff. But yeah, I dig it because especially with Ban All the Music, you get that really good guitar riff, you get the great drums, and actually the drummer, I know, Greg, you were listening to that. Some of the fills that he was doing on the toms were just solid, solid fills.
So a couple of emotions went through my mind very quickly listening to that clip. That first guitar riff, when it's just the guitar doing the dan-dan-dan-dan-dan-dan-dan, I kind of felt like Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I
didn't know what to expect. It was just the guitar. Then when it kicked in, the first thought I had was Muse. And once we got into the groove of the song, I felt like two big influences from these guys had to be maybe like the Arctic Monkeys, meets the Black Keys.
I could see that.
I totally heard some Black Keys feel from that. And
absolutely.
I love it. I think it's really good.
All right, so let's move on to the next track. It's called Wake Up Call. Oh, yeah. Wake Up Call.
That was another really good song.
I see. That's one of those other ones that I really like. I told you, when I started listening to the band, like they really sort of hooked into me and I was like, all right, I'm going to listen to these guys some more. And then I just kept listening to the album. It's like, and that's the thing. I mean, yes, they haven't shown a lot of musical diversity up to the third song so far, but I think that, that's just them sort of establishing, like, this is really what our band is like. This is the kind of music that we like to write. But I know they start to get into other stuff later on. So the next song on the list, unless you guys have something to add.
Well, I was just going to say that this track, more than the other two so far, has really started to make me feel like I've heard this before somewhere. You know, and not maybe necessarily that I have, but in the sense that, like, I can tell this is something that I would like. I could give it a few more listens and really grow to like it.
Yeah, that's exactly the way I felt. I was like, it's a pretty good band. I'll listen to them some more. And then every time I listen to them, it sort of keeps that going. You know, it's like I'm drawn in a little bit more.
I think that last song you just played, I was kind of waiting for it to kick in. But, like, it did kick in a bit. But I was just curious if there was, like, a more climactic moment that we kind of maybe faded out before?
Yeah, there usually is. I mean, they definitely have a good, like, you know, closing to their to most of their songs. It's just that legally we cannot play all of this song. So
okay.
But Jake, do you have anything to add?
Well, they've kind of already shut me up with, like, hey, we're trying to impress you, because that was just Groove. There's your single right there.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm pretty sure that actually was their single.
Okay.
or actually, no, I think this might have been their first single, which is Itch.
I got two things right off the bat. Number one, that drummer, I heard him. He was doing those little offbeat, just hitting the bell on the ride. The ding, 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 and just that little subtle thing, but that got me.
Yeah.
That got me.
I suggest you actually watch some of the videos of them performing live, and the drummer is just crazy good.
He was keeping some really complicated beats, but keeping it in time. I love it when a drummer is like, I'm going to go off and do my own thing, but I don't mess anybody up.
And I mean, I love what the drummer did, but at the same time, what the guitar and bass were doing for the chorus, doing all those like solid off hits that dun 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 dun, it's like the and then pausing. It's like we're not going to hit like all the chords, you know, in like a very, you know, like all the rhythms, you know, at the right time. It's like, no, we're going to do off hits and we're going to do four of them. Then we're going to pause. And then we're going to do another four right after. As like, just that's what I loved the most in that song, because it's definitely a, musically speaking, it is a very complex track and it hooks me.
Yeah.
I like that. Jake, you got anything
very
there?
Very Trent Reznor on the intro.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Which, very much so.
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, intros, I don't know if pop music killed the intro or if YouTube killed the intro or if sampling killed the intro, but songs used to have really long intros.
Yeah.
Yeah, people don't have patience for that, especially if you're trying to put out a hit.
Yeah, but that's true.
I totally relate, because the first thing I thought when I heard that little guitar riff was 90s. At first, I kind of almost thought like Hole, you know, with kind of just that wobbly guitar sound to it. But like Nine Inch Nails, too, you know, both in that same vein. It could have gone either way, and instead they took it off in their own direction.
Yeah. Slightly less asthmatic on the vocals than Trent Reznor, but it's very closer to me. I liked it.
So I saw Nine Inch Nails when they came to St. Louis last time. I'll tell you this. Those guys put on one of the best shows I've ever seen, like one of the best light shows ever. But what I thought was really funny is that, you know, Trent Reznor picks his opening band. He picks whoever he wants. Doesn't matter if they fit with his genre or anything. He just picks them. And he picked Explosions in the Sky, which, if you don't know who Explosions in the Sky are, they are purely instrumental. There's no vocals in any of their songs. And it's like three guitar players and a drummer, or it's like, you know, two guitars and a bass and then and drums. And they produce some of the singly most powerful music stuff in sort of a rock format that I've ever heard in my life. And it was amazing, because you get all these Nine Inch Nails fans, all these hardcore dudes dressed in black and whatever the girls were wearing. And, you know, they're all just like, Nine Inch Nails! And then Explosions in the Sky comes out and they start off with this, you know, really soft guitar thing and just build it over 9 minutes.
Wow.
And it's like, oh my.
Their whole opening set is
just good
one
Lord.
Song.
So I think they played like six songs or something for their entire set, and it was just amazing. But all right, let's get back onto Nothing But Thieves. The next song is called If I Get High, and it's actually a nice slow one. So there you go. If I Get High.
I really, really enjoyed closing my eyes and listening to that song.
It's one of those types of songs. Like it's very mellow, and yet at the same time, it's got really good power underneath it. And you're listening to his lyrics and just like relating to him, or at least some of us, you know, would relate. I don't get high. So, but for me, it's one of those songs that is just really deep and emotional, and he's just trying to like work things out in his own head.
But you know, I mean, with what you're saying about the whole getting high part.
Yeah, and that's not even necessarily him actually talking about, you know, and legitimately getting high.
That's what I was going to say, was that, you know, a lot of emotions can kind of give you a state of euphoria, mm-hmm, or make you feel those extremes. But one of the first things I thought was, feel like it kind of had a bit of a group love kind of feel to it. I like group love. I think that these guys really fit into what is current and popular right now, too. And then the other thought was that I imagine that that would be a really fun song to play. It's not necessarily a song that's going to get everybody up and going, but I think as a musician, that would be a fun song to play.
To me, that's a song that, like, if you're going to play it, it has to be played at night or in an enclosed venue.
Or like with like...
Drop the lights down, spotlight,
yeah,
you know,
there needs to be like fake shooting stars and stuff going, you know, or like
yeah, some
like
type
streaks.
Of video going on behind him, you know, that's like sort of cool and cartoony almost.
Like that song would be really great for like a Super Bowl halftime show as like just the one slow song and like the middle of all the big rock songs.
So one of the bands that this actually reminds me of the most, though, is a band called The Frames, which is an Irish group. And I'm a huge fan of The Frames. I mean, honestly, one of my biggest musical influences. And I've met the lead singer on a few occasions, and he's a really cool guy, too. But, yeah, something about the way that this music is played reminds me a lot of The Frames in their later musical stuff, except this one didn't have violin, and The Frames have a violin. But let's get on to the next one. This one's called Graveyard Whistlin'. That was Graveyard Whistling. Once again, just a really good mellow kind of song. But what I truly love about it is that it builds up with this great verse and then kicks into this chorus that's not only subdued, but basically changes keys. Mm-hmm. And then the piano is doing nothing but those off hits. And the vocals aren't even matching the rhythm of the piano playing underneath it. Like, that's some real skill right there. The fact that somebody actually wrote that part and then he sang a vocal part that doesn't even match it and yet works perfectly.
That snuck up on you like a train yard hobo. that was outstanding. That's the most killer cut I've heard. Yeah.
See, that's interesting. Like, I think it's a good song, but I feel like this song is the most cliche one I've heard so far from the album. In my opinion. I do. Like, it's good. It's not like they lack any musical talent. But it, just something about it. Like I said, some of these songs, they kind of feel like I've heard them before. Mm-hmm. And that's one of them that I feel like you could have named any artist and been like, oh, that was so-and-so, and I would have nodded my head and been like, oh, yeah, cool. Yeah,
if I told you that was a cut off of Michael Bolton album, you would have just gone with it. You're like, yeah, he didn't play saxophone at that time.
I mean, potentially, but I'm not knocking it.
Yeah.
I think I was just I was hoping for something more.
Mm. Well, it completely snuck up on me. That's not what I expected the song to go at all.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, you are right, because I did have that thought for a minute. I was like, which way is this going to go? It could have came in really hard at that one point. It could have just boom, boom, and they, you know, just something really dramatic. But they kind of gave it like maybe like 60%, you know?
Yep, I totally agree. So let's move on to the next one, which is called Hostage.
So that was Hostage. Did it come off of a rejected Peter Gabriel album or a rejected cut off of Beat It? I don't know. But Greg, did it wake up your inner Liam Neeson?
Man, that one woke me up. So all I gotta say, man, is holy 90s again. That with the exception of kind of the higher, you know, falsetto bit there in the middle, like all the way up until that, oof, that had some serious 90s, like back to the Nine Inch Nails again, too. And I'm sitting here thinking, these guys must have some really eclectic influences.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know? And, I mean, I remember seeing interviews with the band, and they were always talking about just the different people that influenced them. But even the lead singer, I mean, if you listen to what he's actually singing, he's not doing a massive amount of rock vocals.
Yeah.
He's doing, you know, rock influenced things, but he's doing all these weird like high parts, going on these like jazz runs sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's that's why I'm always drawn into this band, because it's not a normal thing. Yes, they do their music can sound like other bands, but at the same time, there is something that is uniquely theirs in every song.
Yeah, that dirty distorted bass sound too. And that kind of makes me feel like Muse with that. I like that track. That's probably one of my favorites so far.
All right, so let's move on to the next one. It's called Trip Switch.
This is the one. Yeah. Sharing secrets with another world. Rubbing shoulders with some unknown. Press a button and we'll both be happy. Sending signals is a dirty trick. Get my love in a digital package. Trip, switch, trip, switch. What we do in the
There you go, Trip Switch. Greg, what you got?
That was the song. See, I knew I had heard these guys before. That was the single. That one has been getting tons of airplay.
I'm looking at it right now. Let's see. Number 6 in Canada, ranked 22nd on the U.S. Hot Rock Songs, number 6 on U.S. Rock Airplay, number 1 on the U.S. Alternative Songs chart, wow, and number 28 on the Mainstream Rock Billboard.
I know I've been hearing that one for like the last 6 months. The only one thing I will say musically about it, that the best part of that song is when they're building up to the chorus and that guitar is doing the little kind of wonky walk down. The bow, 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 bow,
yeah.
Bow. It's almost like he's detuning it, but he's not. I don't know really what he's doing there. Maybe
he's just going minor
in
a major key.
Yeah, it's just the progression, but it almost has that feel to it, like he's almost just down-tuning the guitar while he does it, and it sounds so cool.
It adds tension without completely breaking down the melody.
Yeah, it does, and tension at the right time, because then it's... you know, and breaks into the chorus there, which is very bold and really hits you hard. But I think that kind of giving it that little bit of tension there, a little bit of awkwardness, and then into the boom, that was almost brilliant.
Almost brilliant. All right, so up next we have Lover Please Stay.
Lover, I know you're weary as tired from the night. Lover, come to the kitchen floor, tiles are cold, so am I. So
I just got this feeling that he like wrote this and then like was sitting on a couch with his girlfriend and like playing this song for her, and he just wanted to get his Mac on.
this was that song.
I could be completely mistaken that he wasn't trying to get some with this song.
This is the Netflix and chill song.
I mean, this could legitimately just be like him, you know, really going through a heartbreak or something. But at the same time, like, I'm imagining it in my head that he wrote it, and then it's just like, hey babe, I wrote this song. You want to hear it?
I can see like laying on the bed in a dorm room.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and playing this song.
I was imagining like a really crappy couch too. So,
Nog Hide. All crappy couches are made out of Nog Hide. But I feel like this is the track off the album that somebody else is going to take and cover, and it's going to shoot to the top of every chart.
Maybe
Elton John did this on piano.
Or maybe like somebody does it, like we were kind of checking out The Voice earlier, you know, like somebody goes on The Voice and does their version of this song.
Yeah.
And that's where it kind of blows up for both them and the performer. I do want to say, though, I really want to get this in. Does anybody else pick up any kind of Queen vibe?
A little bit.
Did you?
A little bit.
I'm glad it's not just me, because I felt like... just Freddie Mercury, when they calm it down, but he still just shows the range, but he doesn't really have to try.
Yeah.
I really, really felt that vibe.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's get on to the next track, which is called Drawing Pins.
Every light is blinding. Every
Man. So that song, I really, really love, because it's got that sustained note on the tonic that the guitar or somebody's doing. I can't tell if it's guitar or piano, but that like throughout the chorus, and that very simple guitar part, dun, 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 like that. I love that kind of stuff. The very simple rhythms with just a good, strong chord.
I like to call that driving rock, because it's just the song is just driving forward.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Kind of powering forward.
Absolutely.
It so the thought I get from this one is like late 90s, early 2000s kind of alternative rock. The band that came to mind was the Dandy Warhols.
I can see that.
If you're familiar with them. Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, I kind of got that feel from it, because it is. It's definitely that driving, just chugging forward song.
Yes.
And I think all the little undertones, too, help kind of keep that momentum going.
Absolutely. Jake, do you have anything to add?
Close shows out with this one?
They don't close shows out with that one, as far as I know.
They should. Leave them wanting more.
Yeah.
I mean,
I could see that.
Yeah. Little just that guitar part will stay with everyone when they go.
No, yeah. We need Michael Bay explosions.
They do close out with like a big one.
Oh yeah.
I'm pretty sure that when they performed, they did do things like High Enough or If I Get High, which is kind of interesting to see, because when they're performing, that's a song that can make or break your set. You know, you play all these fast songs, these really hard hitting songs, and then all of a sudden it's just this really slow piano kind of driven song. It's like you could really lose the crowd. But when I saw them, like, they were performing, and I want to say it was, like, closer to Twilight. And so it was a really good moment, I thought, of him, like, singing that song. I could be completely mistaken, and I'm making up memories as I go. But I'm fairly certain that that's what happened. But my wife will be like, what are you talking about? They didn't play that song
but
there.
But you know,
it's like, I don't care. I remember
it. Even if that didn't happen, though, that's like the emotions that it stirs.
Exactly,
in you, you
know? Exactly. And so I really want to see these guys again, because I wish that I could have seen them when they came back through to St. Louis, because they came through only like a month or two after they did Life is Beautiful. And what was really great is that they were posting pictures and stuff on their Facebook or Twitter or whatever of just like, you know, hey, it's like we're in St. Louis. But one of the coolest things is that they showed up early, like the day before. So they spent like at least 2 days in St. Louis.
Cool.
But they showed up the day before because they said, heard nothing but great things about this band, Highly Suspect. We're going to check them out tonight.
Oh, sweet.
And so Highly Suspect played like the night before. And so they showed up, saw them play, rock out, and do all that, and then the next night did their own thing. I was like, that's really cool.
That is cool.
Like, to really show up and like help promote this, not help promote, but just to acknowledge this other band and how great they are, and then, you know, go and do your own thing. I thought that was really nice of them.
And both of those bands could totally tour together.
Absolutely. Actually, they both were on the bill at Life is Beautiful this last year, although I have to admit, Highly Suspect didn't really mix with that crowd. Like, Highly Suspect's kind of angry. And
yeah,
Life is Beautiful
heavier.
Is just like, what are you talking about? Life's great. And, you know, they're Johnny, the lead singer of Highly Suspect, singing about bath salts and stuff. It's like, all right, okay. It's like, you know, it was a weird thing, too, because Highly Suspect played and they didn't play Lydia at Life is Beautiful, and nobody knows why.
Weird.
They didn't acknowledge it. They didn't say anything. They just were like, all right, we're done. Bye. And then like walked off stage.
But
it was messed up. Like,
but
people
at the
were
same
mad.
Time. Yeah. Cause they're Grammy nominated.
Yeah.
Highly Suspect.
Three time Grammy nominated.
Yeah. You don't even play your hit.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So let's get on to the next one. We've only got two more left. This one is called Painkiller.
Now you never grow, now you
So you know how we were just talking about them touring with Highly Suspect? That would be good. Mm-hmm. That's the exact kind of song that you reference to sound like Highly Suspect. Mm. It's like that's a very similar vein. And Jake, I know you're probably going to have to listen to some Highly Suspect, to get what we're talking about. But it's that sort of really heavy driving guitar part for the most part. They've got some other songs too that are slower, but I think you'd really like Highly Suspect, actually.
Fair enough. I mean, if they sound anything like they invited the Hives in for just one track.
So, I'm just saying.
this song started out with a lot of promise. And it reminded me of, and I'm trying to think if it's an Arctic Monkeys song or which one is it? But it's the one that's... You know what I'm talking about? Very driving. It starts that same way.
I know what song you're talking about. I just can't name it.
I know what song I'm talking about too, but I can't name it. But I will say though that I think that song just slightly under-delivered for me. It could have gone just a little bit bigger and bolder, and I feel like they kind of hit a plateau and just wrote it.
It wasn't the Vampire Weekend that you were talking about, was it?
No, I don't think. All right, so.
I'm getting my bands confused too. So, too many of these indie rock bands that are just starting to mess with my head.
Am I thinking is that a Queens of the Stone Age song?
It might be. That does sound pretty.
I think it was Queens of the Stone Age.
I think you're right because I can hear it in my head.
Mm-hmm.
It's
almost like Little Sister Go with the Flow or.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd have to go back through and listen to their stuff to try and find it.
Let me know. Hit us up on social media. Let me know.
If you know what song he was trying to sing, let us know at Follow the Sound Podcast on Facebook and I Follow the Sound on Twitter. Good stuff.
We only got one more?
One more. And this is for the normal track listing. There is a deluxe version which has an additional 4 songs. We're not going to cover those songs. We're just going to do... the normal track listing. But if you want to get the deluxe version, if you like the band enough, go ahead. I did, but we're sticking to only 12 today. And the final song is called Tempt You, of which it has in parentheses Evocatio. I don't know what that means, but I'm about to find out. So that was Tempt You.
I think that this is a fitting like last song on the album. And
yeah.
It's
a good conclusion.
Yeah. And I think that going from the previous song to this one is a good transition, especially to close out the album.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I think always driving song and then kind of the big moody emotional song that you end on that final note that it's just like, it's over.
And I mean, there's no real rules to how you structure an album,
but there's an art.
There's a feeling to it, you know. Yeah, exactly. There's an art form to it because I love albums that start off big, and then kind of have that you know, softer lull in the middle and then build back up to something huge.
Take you on a journey.
It's like, you know, a nice circle that they create, you know, that's great. I even love it when a band plans it out even to the extent to where the last chord of the last song carries over ringing and then loops back around to the same sustained chord that starts the first song. Like, I've seen albums that have done that, and that is just brilliant.
I would have probably not even noticed that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a couple of really good albums that I know that have done stuff like that. And I always think that that's just a brilliant maneuver. So I really like Tempt You. It's sort of a really good mellow song. It's not my favorite mellow song on there, but I'd say High Enough is probably still my favorite, like, one that he does, because it's really emotional and stuff. But I accept this album for what it is as a whole. Like, yeah, you can like somebody for their singles, or you can pick just one song that they have, you know, but if you listen to the album as a whole, you can get a completely different respect or understanding of the band. And I think that Nothing But Thieves really pulled that off with this album. As far as a first thing that they did, I mean, I would say this, let's do it in the sports analogy, I would say this is a solid triple. It's not a home run. Solid triple.
I would tend to agree with
diving you. into third base. It's not a stand-up triple.
I would tend to agree with you, Brian. Now that we're talking about the album as a whole, I would say that, you know, for their first coming out impression and kind of giving it what they got,
yeah,
I think they accomplished that goal really well. I think they all demonstrated that they have fantastic musical talent. I mean, there were several times I loved when all the note bending that
yes,
they were doing
yes,
on
yes.
the guitar. We talked about that a couple different tracks. They did it different ways too.
Yes.
It's not just like a squealing, you know, Eddie Van Halen, you know, bending note or anything like a hammer on or something. But it was just they did it multiple times in multiple ways.
Yes.
And I think the fact that you can explore with something that is can kind of be a go to. But yet you can still keep changing it up every time you come back to it, too.
Yes.
It's like you got an ace of clubs in your pocket, but yet every time it's like a different suit coming out, you know? It's like you're expecting one, and you get that ace, but it's ace of hearts instead. It's ace of diamonds instead.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of my analogy for this album is that
yeah, we need to come up with a ranking system for the albums that we do. Like, you know, give it our star rating or something, but I don't know what to do. It's like I'm sticking with my analogy that it was a triple, not a home run, but a good triple.
Well, I'm gonna listen to Graveyard Whistling two or three times on the way home. So
good.
Yeah, this is definitely an album. I had not heard the album. The only song I had heard was Trip Switch, right?
Yeah,
that's the song. That's the only one I had heard so far because it was on the radio. But this is an album that I'm legitimately interested in going out and getting now.
All right. So
realistically.
I'm going to do this. We're going to do it on a scale of 1 to 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm going to give this a solid 7.
Okay. Well, with a 1 being
one
bad,
being bad,
a 10
being perfect.
Being really great.
A 10. No. I'm like a 10 is a perfect album.
Mm-hmm.
As in 10 is an album that you will not only listen to again, you will listen to it multiple times over. And I can honestly only name about between 5 and 10 albums that even remotely get 10. You know, one of them being the first album that I reviewed on this show being Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys. Another one would be the Stereo Rewind and Record. Like, you know, that's like the epitome of your superb album liking. So between 1 and 10, 1 being, oh my God, I want to burn this and forget that I ever listened to it. To a 10 being, oh my God, I want to listen to this for the rest of my life.
I'm going to go, I feel like I have to grade it on a curve because I haven't heard the entire album.
True.
A third of most of the
but
tracks.
But just your gut instinct. So.
My gut instinct. I'm going to say about an 8.
8? All right, good. Hmm. Greg?
Well, as you could tell, I was kind of the most skeptical, I think, throughout the review.
I would say so, even though you'd kind of heard, you know, at least one of their songs before.
Mm-hmm.
So you knew the style.
So I think I want to give them a 6.5 because it's better than just okay. It's better than good.
Yeah.
It's not great. It's not excellent, but it's definitely better than good. And I think the 6.5 then becomes a 7 on my second or third time listening to this album.
That's good. All right. See, I've got this theory that when it comes to making an album, you can make an okay album if it has one good song. You can make a good album if it has at least two or three good songs. And you can make a great album if at least half of the album is, like, you know, a good album. And then, like, you've got a perfect album, which is, of course, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, that 5+ kind of range. So I think that a 7 for me is a pretty solid evaluation of what this band has done here. I want to see what they're going to do next.
Yes.
Even more.
Definitely.
Because I think that if this is what they can write when they've got a couple of years to write music, let's see what it's like when they've got, you know, like a year and a half or, you know, just whatever it is while touring, while doing all of this other stuff, while not having like a lot of those other emotional attachments to things. It's like, let's see what kind of music they can come up with when they're actually forced to truly be creative in sort of a creative desert.
But I don't want to see these guys burn out.
Mm-mm.
I don't want to see these guys be like a rocket and they shoot out with a, you know, a good start and then it's just pow, you know, and
yeah.
And they,
but
they,
I would say also considering that on like the liner notes here, it's basically the band, like they give credit to everybody who writes the songs. You know, it's not just the lead singer who's writing stuff. In fact, his name isn't even on some of these. And that's what I think is just amazing too, is that like, okay, Lover Please Stay was only written by Brown. Like, just because. I mean, he was the one who wrote it. Yeah, the other guy sings it, Mason sings it, but it's not his song. It's somebody else's song.
Do you kind of get where I'm coming from with disagreeing with you a little bit on the creative?
Absolutely.
Because I do think that there's a lot of albums that get put out that the time deadline, the deadline kind of kills the album. I've had a few bands that I've had high expectations for a new album, but the label made them put it out so quickly that they even said in interviews, they were like, look, we got one, maybe two of the songs like perfect and those are killer. And the rest of the album, we just kind of had to get on there because we were running out of time.
No doubt, follow-up to Tragic Kingdom kind of feels like that for me.
Yeah.
There's a lot of albums that really fell into that
and
category.
I don't want to see these guys fall into that too, you know?
No, I completely agree. Like, I want to see what happens when they are given a chance to create, you know, their sophomore album and just, you know, see what their creativity leads them to create. But I know that for me, this album will always be something that I kind of go to when I'm in a certain mood. You know, when I want to not have like just straight rock, but I want to have that other more emotional side to it as well.
Good ups and downs.
Same thing for me with like the Frames, you know, like I said. So I think it's a great album. And I'm hoping that our listeners also thought it was a pretty good album, too. If you like it, find us on Facebook at Follow the Sound Podcast or on Twitter at I Follow the Sound, and tell us what you thought of the album. Hopefully you agree, or if you disagree, tell us why you disagree, and we will always take it into account, because, you know, opinions for music are wide and varied and can be vastly different. And so it's not like we're saying we're right or you're wrong. It's just that everybody's opinion is different. So if you disagree with us, let us know. But if you agree with us, also let us know, because that's the way we are.
And recap for me again, the band name, the album name, and the year it was released.
Band name, Nothing But Thieves. Album name, Nothing But Thieves. And it was released in 2015.
Okay.
October 16th, 2015.
Cool.
I know the exact day.
Self-titled album, Nothing But Thieves.
I always like self-titled albums. The only time I don't really care for self-titled albums is when you're like, you know, five albums in.
Yep.
And that's when you're like, all right, let's do our self-titled album. Or you can just keep doing like what Weezer does and just not name your albums ever.
Yeah, I was going to say, and self-titled twice.
Speaking of that, we're actually going to be doing Weezer the Blue album in a couple of weeks here. So
hey.
I'm going to bring in my brother.
I can't not have listened to that album, though, because I've already listened to it way too many times.
Yeah, no. I mean, this is definitely going to be an album where we really break down because the songs, because we've listened to them 1,000 times.
We're really going to analyze the sweater song.
Yes. So if you enjoy it, check us out on Facebook and Twitter, because I'm always on there and I'll get it and I'll talk to you because that's just the kind of guy I am. I love conversations, if you haven't guessed. But this has been a great episode for me personally, just because I like the band, I like the album, and I like doing these shows. But I am Brian Kroc, and of course I've got Greg Harvey and Jacob Crum, and of course can't do this without lineupmedia.fm. They produce a bunch of great shows. If you go to lineupmedia.fm, you can find something absolutely that you would love. If you love music, specifically if you love Irish music, go check out Celtic Music Lab. It is hosted by my fellow producer John Baldwin, and it is a lovely, lovely show, and he interviews some really good guests and plays some really good music, and is just right in that vein, though, of that good classic Irish music. So if you want to help support the show, though, you can do so by going to followthesoundpodcast.com. See on the right hand side the Amazon banner. Click on that banner and it takes you to Amazon. Do all of your normal shopping. Won't cost you anything extra, and we get a little bit of money back for a referral, and it's that simple. So followthesoundpodcast.com, right hand corner Amazon banner, or followthesoundpodcast.com/Amazon. I am Brian Kroc.
I'm Greg Harvey. Brian, Jake, always a pleasure, my guys.
Absolutely.
Jake, it was nice having you on.
Thank you again.
Keep coming back. I enjoy it. And remember, if you hear it, follow the sound.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.